Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is Vix the Angel of Metal, your host for The Killer Show, and live on 103.2 Preston FM. We have a great show for you today. We have a very special guest, which we're going to be talking to in a bit, called Daryl Miller. He used to be in the Killer Dwarves band, a awesome hard rock 80s and 90s band, and we're going to be talking about his new band, Automan, as well. So all is good here, and I have got on the line Daryl Dwarf Miller. Hello.
Hello, if it isn't the Angel of Metal I'm talking to.
It is, man. Love it.
How are you, Vicky?
I'm not too bad. How about you?
I'm in excellent mood today, Friday.
It's always a party day.
It's a Friday. I love that.
Yeah, cool. So what have you been up to today? I mean, it must be in the morning or lunchtime or nearly.
Yeah, well, it's noon here, so I usually get up around 11, so I got up an hour earlier for you today. I got up at 10 o'clock to be in good voice.
Oh, that's good. Get your caffeine kicking.
Yeah. My day starts, have a lot on my plate today. As you know, I run my own record label, and I am... the Automan disc is released, the Pocket Change disc, my new album, my new band, and it's an ongoing job every day to market a record, as you know. So I'm quite busy. My management and my publicists and all that have me jumping around the room every day. If I'm not on tour, I'm working on marketing the record.
It's good to keep busy anyway.
Yes, it is. Keeps me out of trouble.
Absolutely. Now, for those who haven't fast-tracked and basically caught up to where me and Daryl are at the moment, you did a text interview with me in December. So if you want to go on, if you are listening in at home, then go on to angelometal.com and just have a quick read of Daryl's answers and some of my questions, and you can do. But just, let's just basically take it way, way, way back, probably when I wasn't even born. Just give me a brief history of your musical career.
Well, we can start out. That's funny you said you weren't born. That's very true. Because the Killer Dwarfs was my very first successful band out of high school, you could say. Like, I was like 17, 18 years old when Russ Graham and I formed the Killer Dwarfs. And, you know, just to sum it up, really, it's funny, in 1988, we toured Europe with Iron Maiden, so that's 20 years ago, and, we played the Hammersmith Odeon 3 nights sold out, we did Wembley Arena 2 nights sold out, we did all the UK, Scotland, was one of the highlight tours of my career, really, one of them. I've done many, you know, with Motley Crue and bands like that, but... The Iron Maidens are a good bunch. I love that band to this day, and we're good friends, and I'll always remember that tour. And the Killer Dwarfs' career spanned 20 years. We're not together at present. And then after the Killer Dwarfs broke up in the mid-90s, I moved to California, and I joined this southern rock band called Laidlaw, which was an awesome-type Leonard Skinner-type band, and I had a good seven-year run with that. Did two albums with that band.
You worked with Nikki Sixx with them.
I did mention Motley Crue there. Yeah, Nikki actually discovered the band and signed Laidlaw to his label, and he put us on tour for 2 or 3 years with ZZ Top and Scorpions and Motley Crue, and I just got lucky again. You know, I felt very blessed. I got to get back on the road again after the long years with the Killer Dwarfs success. And to bring you up, I'm just trying to be quick here, bring you right up to today. In the early 2000s, I formed my own band, got off the drums, and became a lead singer. Well, I've always been a lead singer, but I got off the drums, and I'm a front man now, and I formed a band with Carlton Lockhart, my writing partner, and voila, we have Automan.ca, my new band, and we just have a worldwide release on Sony BMG, just came out St. Paddy's Day. It's out now. You can get it on Amazon.uk or .com, or it's at all the outlets online, iTunes, the whole thing.
What do you think about your whole musical career? I mean, you've been, as you said, you've been very lucky, and you've got a wealth of knowledge. You know, not only just in performing and mastering, because I think especially with frontmen, they got to find their own flair, if you get me. But also as well, you got to know the business side of things.
Yeah, well. you'd have to be hit over the head with a board not to learn a lot about the music business if you've been around it as long as I have. I mean, you know, the Killer Dwarfs had signed a major deal with Epic Records out of New York back in 87, and, you know, I've had four or five record deals over the years. And it's just a learning process, and you know, I'm at the point now where I know the business well enough that I've just taken the reins myself and started running my own label, and it just made sense to me. I mean, at this stage of my career, it made sense to me to kind of just run my own show, not because I have an ego and I want to run my own show. It was really just a business move, and between you and I know I sleep quite well at night knowing where all my ducks are in a row. You know what I mean? I know where all my money is and where it's going at this point, and I sleep well because of that.
Sleep helps, and knowing where you're at does as well.
Well, the business can be quite shady at times, put it that way.
Unfortunately, it can be. Well, we're going to go into a song break at the moment. We're going to be playing a Killer Dwarfs track, and then we're going to be playing some Automan, which is very, very, very exciting. Daryl is going to stay on the line. Got a few more cues for him. Are you up for that, man?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much for having me, by the way, and congratulations on your show. You're doing a great job.
Oh, thank you very much. Okay, so we're going to listen to a Killer Dwarfs track, and then we're going to be right back at you, listeners, so stay tuned. All right, that was the Killer Dwarfs with We Stand Alone, and I have got the drummer on the line, but now he's a singer, frontman, and he is in a band called Automan, and of course it is Daryl Miller. Hello.
Hello, I'm back.
You're back, darling.
Yeah, it's funny you used the Killer Dwarfs. I don't know if you realize this, but we all had the same last name, like real dwarf fans. Like, my name was Daryl Dwarf. that was my AKA, like it was on my passport, you know what I mean? Like there was Russ Dwarf, Daryl Dwarf, Mike Dwarf, and Ron Dwarf. And our label back then kind of turned into like a Ramones sort of thing. We all had the same last name.
Yeah.
So I've kind of held on to that handle. I've had no choice. So, you know, it's like Daryl Miller is my real name. And so now it's turned into Daryl Dwarf Miller.
Well, who do you want to be called? Do you want to be Daryl Miller or Daryl Dwarf or Daryl Dwarf Miller?
No, all three then. No, so you can call me Daryl Miller. I'm good with that. I just thought I'd make the little story of where actually really came from, you know, with the whole dwarf thing. But the hardcore dwarf fans just continue to call me Daryl Dwarf. I can't shake the name. It's pretty funny, but I'm 6 feet tall. I'm not short at all.
That's pretty cool. All right, compose yourself, Vicky. Anyway, let's get back to the interview now. Let's talk Automan. It is your own band. You've been going since 2002. So just to give the listeners an overview, I mean, because I know, tell them what the crack is.
Well, what really motivated me here with this band was I grew up in the 70s, actually, and I'm influenced by 70s rock music. That's my favorite artist. So you're going back to the days of Deep Purple and, you know, Led Zeppelin, the Stones, and, you know, AC/DC, Bon Scott, AC/DC, early Aerosmith. All these bands were my heroes, basically. And, you know, I really wanted to write a great rock record, you know, a rock and roll record, you know. And my guitar player, Carlton Lockhart, who's a fantastic musician, he's kind of like a mini Jeff Beck. He plays with his fingers and he plays upside down. His guitar's strung like regular. He flips it around. He plays left-handed, but he strums up. It's like he's so unique as a player. Guitar players that come to see us live just don't know what he's doing. They're trying to watch how he plays. They can't figure him out. But anyway, he comes from the school of Jeff Beck and the Stones and stuff, so we really hit it off as writing partners, Carlton and I. And I think we've written a really sonic rock and roll record. You know, that's true to the art of the artist that I love. So I'm not trying to do something, you know, reinvent the wheel here. I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to do or even a retro sounding record. I just was doing what I believed, to tell you the truth, in the writing aspect of this record. I wasn't following any flavors of the month or the Nickelbacks of the world or whatever. We're, you know, Automan is Automan. We are our own entity, basically. And you know, I really love the band, and I love what we've produced here. And we're getting a legion of fans that love the same blues-rooted rock sound. So I couldn't be happier with it, Vicky, to tell you the truth.
As you mentioned at the beginning of this show, your debut album is called Pocket Change, and it was released on the 17th of March through Sony BMG. Just tell me about that album.
Well, I haven't told anybody this story yet, and you're going to be the first. And,
this is an exclusive, people.
Yes, it is an exclusive, and I'm glad I'm telling you because it has to do with the UK, basically. Pocket Change, the whole theme of the disc, I don't know if you've noticed, it's a 20-pound note. It's all the currency of the UK. It's a 20-pound note, actually, that is the CD. The center is a real 20-pound note. And so that's what's in Carlton's hand on the cover. He's handing that's myself on the cover and Carlton. And I'm holding a sign that says, need tour bus ticket. And he's handing me a 20-pound note. That's what that is. So the whole theme of the record kind of got based around Oliver Twist, kind of, and the whole begging for money kind of pickpocket thing. And I really got onto this theme. But what motivated it is a good friend of mine, a dear friend of mine, Michael Kenny, works for Iron Maiden. And he's worked for Maiden for 20 years or so. And he's Steve Harris's tech. And he was in Toronto, or Maiden was in Toronto last year touring, and I was hanging out with him. And we were having a little few drinks together after the show one night. And he handed me this 20-pound note, and he said, take this and put it towards the budget of the record. And it's for good luck. You know, he was rather drunk, really, and he gave me a 20-pound note. So I took that and used it as kind of a good luck thing and made it the theme of the disc, and actually used the actual 20-pound note as the art of the record. That's the actual bill he gave me, and I still have the bill. And so that's there's your story of the actual design of the Pocket Change record.
I would just like to say the album does not cost £20, and you do not get a £20 note in each and every album. I would like one, but
thank God for you mentioning that. I would get a lot of trouble if they misconstrued what I said. Thank you, Vicky, for clarifying that.
Yeah, absolutely. Where did you record the album?
We recorded it in four different studios. The bed tracks, which is all the drums and a lot of the bass and guitar tracks, were recorded in Toronto, Canada, at a studio called Iguana Studios. Then we went on the outskirts of Toronto to a studio called Dune Tunes Recording, and I laid down my vocal tracks there, and the rest of all the guitars were done at that studio. Then we flew to Raleigh, North Carolina, and we mixed the disc there at a different studio, which was Matt Horton's studio, who worked with Nine Inch Nails and Rob Thomas and all these artists. And we mixed the disc there. It was mixed by Greg Looper from Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. He works for Tom Petty. Then the disc was mastered at Sterling Sound in New York City, which is a very important part of any record, is the mastering. The mastering is very important. And Justin Sturtz mastered it, and I couldn't have been happier with the outcome of the sonicness of this record. You know, it's not overproduced. It's just a straight-up rock guitar record, blues-rooted rock guitar record. And there's no, you know, no smokes and screens and mirrors with this. It's just what you hear is what you get. And that's what we deliver live, including all the backing vocals and everything. I mean, we pretty well deliver that whole disc live the way you hear it. So that was something I was proud of when we were done with that.
Well, we're going to be playing a song next called Back in the Sun. Can you tell me more about that song?
Back in the Sun, I wrote the lyrics in that. And basically, you know, between the breakup of the Killer Dwarfs and me in my transition to moving to Los Angeles to join Laidlaw, you know, that was kind of a dark time in my life. I was in a, you know, I was really in a transition of not knowing exactly where what I was going to do after being in the Killer Dwarfs for 20 years. And I really wrote that song about that period in 95 when I literally got back in the sun when I moved to California. And my career picked up again after it was in this dark place. And that's sort of what the song's about. And just in time for summer, too. Back in the sun.
Yay!
Yep. I can't wait. We've had a long winter here in Canada, I'll tell you that.
Well, we're going to be playing this tune. Darryl's going to stay on the line again for some more questions. Seriously, man, I've got a whole long list for you to answer.
Great.
Stay tuned, everybody, because we're going to be playing some awesome music. Sorry about that, folks. I nearly missed my cue. I've just been chatting to a lovely gentleman on the phone, and he goes by the name of Darryl Miller. Hello.
Hello.
There he is.
We're back on again.
Yeah, sorry, folks.
Back in the sun.
That's a good track, man.
Thank you very much. One of the harder rockers on it, for sure. And we have released this to radio as the first single as well. So we're just over in North America here. We're just starting to service radio all over North America, which is a huge task, as you know, these days. And it's a lot has changed in the music business, and things are done differently now. You know, a lot of radio, you know, will only accept digital download of the song, and it's not like the old school days of mailing a disc to radio and then following up on it, you know. That's not how it works now. A lot of it's done through digital programs. You have to pay money and the whole deal. So times have changed, girl.
Absolutely. Now let's talk about your record label. You mentioned it earlier, like how you deal with the business side of the music industry. And, you know, you have to manage it. Why did you start Uncle Dunk Records?
Well, the real reason I started it, and I kind of touched on it earlier, was kind of out of necessity, really, because I don't think... You know, bands are not getting the big record deal like back in the 80s. It's very far and in between that, like a Warner Brothers, for example, would sign a new artist. They're really just turning into glorified distribution houses, really. So I started Uncle Dunk Records to just have a vehicle for Auto Man to drive in. No pun intended, right? And, you know, I started the label... not to sign bands, just for my band, Auto Man, to have a label, number one. And then I went after the distribution, because the distribution, anybody, here's the miss, you know, what people don't get, I don't think, our new artists don't get. Like, anybody can start their own record label these days. If you can have a website and you go online, you can have a record label. But that doesn't mean anything, really, because without having distribution and all the other things that come along with a real record label, you're not really in business. You're just a name on a website. That's it. So, you know, the fact that I've been in the business so long, I have learned a lot about how the business runs from a record label standpoint. And I just worked hard for the 2 years that Auto Man started in 2002. You know, I put out this EP first before Pocket Change, which was like a calling card to the industry to see who would be interested in the band. And lucky for me, you know, between my management and I have some really good people working with me on my team, we landed a deal with Megaforce out of New York City, which is a major label, actually, from the 80s that had Anthrax and Megadeth and all these bands. And through Megaforce, you know, we have Sony BMG as our distributor. So Uncle Dunk Records is via Megaforce, Sony BMG. So I'm in business. You know, I'm a registered label now with the government. I mean, like, Uncle Dunk Records is a legitimate label as of just last year, really. It's taken me 4 or 5 years to get the label up to stuff. So there's basically your answer.
Well, don't forget in the official stamp of approval. I mean, it takes ages to build something, and are you reaping the benefits? That's what I was going to say.
Well, as far as from a financial standpoint, no, not yet. That's a good question that you brought up here, Vicky, because the financial end of running a label, let's not forget that. If it's my label, then I'm responsible for it financially as well. So I've had to invest literally thousands of dollars of my own money into Automan, into my own band, including the recording and the manufacturing of the disc. And, you know, that's a lot of money involved in that, and you have to be willing to commit to that. And then now I wear all these hats of in the marketing end. Like I mentioned, I do have a good team of people working with me, such as my management and everything, but at the end of the day, I have to get up in the morning and go to work, basically, in my office, which is the majority of it is in cyberspace, and work every day and market the disc, you know, talk to great people like you to help market Pocket Change. I need the media, I need you, and I do many interviews like this. And it all pays off and it all helps.
You've definitely paid your dues to rock and roll, I think, man.
Oh, what an understatement. I certainly have, and you know what? I'm, in a weird way, I feel like I'm still paying my dues, but I'm loving every minute of it.
Let's talk about the metal and rock scene in Canada. You're from Toronto.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And other bands that have come out of Canada, of course, big mega superstars, Nickelback from there. Also, I think Sum 41, Avril Lavigne, and also Anvil as well.
Oh, that's so funny you brought up Anvil. You know what? I think I'm going to their movie premiere tonight.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, their movie is coming out tonight in Toronto, and Lips and Rob are going to be at the theater. And I'm actually very old friends with the boys, and it's quite miraculous what's happening with them. I can't believe it. I was talking to Russ, singer in the Killer Dwarfs, about this, because, I mean, we used to tour with Anvil. We used to do shows with them here in Canada 20 years ago. And, you know, here they are, their career in a crazy way has been resurrected by a movie producer, you know? It's crazy.
I don't know if you've heard of an interviewer in the UK, and he's quite iconic. He's called Jonathan Ross. Have you heard of him?
Rings a bell.
Yeah, well, he does this weekly, a film review, so he always does, the latest films that are coming out, and one of them was the Anvil documentary, and he thought it was kind of like a Spinal Tap film at first.
Yeah.
And as he went on, he kind of, began to realise this is actually really a real band, and I've personally not seen the movie yet, but I really want to see it.
Well, apparently that is what the charm of the movie is supposed to be. It's like, from what I've heard, you know, the struggle these guys have gone through is just unbelievable, and they've stayed together. There's only two guys left, the original band, but still, Lips and Rob started Anvil, and I guess what the movie, where I'm about to find out, I go see it tonight, but it almost makes you feel like you want to see some sort of a happy ending, because they were so broke, and, you know, they played in front of 15 people at most of their shows, and I think it's just a kind of a heartwarming sort of thing that you get off it, but it is very Spinal Tap at the same time. That's what I heard too.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I was saying, that Jonathan Ross was watching this movie, and at the end of it, he was converted, and he actually bought an Anvil album.
There you go. See, and this I guess this is what's happening. Then they're. It's literally resurrected their career. Anybody in Toronto from in the music business here that knows Anvil would never think that this band, anything like this would ever happen to these guys. It's just like everybody's in shock about it. Number one, they have management for the first time in their career. They're managed by Slayer's manager now.
Yeah.
And VH1, which is a powerhouse company, has picked up the movie, and it's because of VH1 it's getting the distribution, it's getting out there. So It's just crazy.
Make a movie.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody's like all of a sudden, oh, make a movie. But, you know, good for those guys. I'm really happy for them, you know. It's nice to see a good human interest story kind of thing of these guys that struggled for 30 years and now they're actually going to make some money. It's great. I'm happy about it for them.
Yeah, well, I've personally not seen Anvil live, or I've not seen the movie yet, but I'm definitely looking forward to it. But another film, well, kind of like a rockumentary that's coming out as well, of course, is Iron Maiden, Flight 666.
Yeah, I really can't wait to see that. And actually, they were, like I said, Michael Kenny, Steve's tech, is a really good friend of mine. And he was telling me about the film crew on the last tour when they were here in Toronto. I met the film crew at the after show party. And they were following them around on the jet on the whole tour. So it ought to be, that's going to be a good one. Definitely.
Well, I can't wait to see that, but I know it's going to be released this month, I think on the 21st of April in the UK, and you can actually go and see that at View Cinema at the Capital Centre in Preston, people, so make sure you get down to that.
Cool. Yeah, I can't wait to see that myself.
Unfortunately, Daryl can't make an appearance there, or Brucey, but hey.
No, well, maybe, I don't know, maybe the Angel of Metal can talk to some promoters and get Automan over there playing. That's what we'd like to do.
I'll see about that. But, yeah, it was quite funny, though, because when I was telling my parents about it, I mean, they went to Maiden gigs, and, of course, they knew the Quill of Dwarves as well. But when I was telling them, they said, oh, Iron Maiden's playing at Preston, and they went, you what?
Really?
They actually thought that Maiden were going to play at Preston.
No, it's just the movie, right?
Yeah, it's the movie, but they actually thought it was the band.
Oh, well, maybe Anvil started that. Now there's every movie coming out, they think they're playing at the show. I don't know. Crazy stuff.
Absolutely. Crazy stuff. Absolutely. Now let's get back to the interview. You lived in LA for some time. How does that differ from anywhere else in the world, because you've toured everywhere?
L.A., did you say?
L.A.
Yeah. Well, that was, you know what? L.A., I'm not the biggest fan. I lived there for 7 years. I lived in Long Beach, actually, which is a good 40 miles away from the madness of Hollywood and L.A. And so I actually really love Long Beach. It's, you know, it's a nice, beautiful, smaller type city. But you know what? L.A.'s the capital of rock, you know, of the music business, really, New York and L.A. in America, and, you know, it's beautiful there. It's just a little crazy, you know, the whole Hollywood thing I'm not all that wild about. I'm really a true-blooded Canadian, and not so much into the Flash and the whole movie industry side of L.A., but you know what? I had a beautiful stay there, and like I said, I lived there for 7 years, and I still have a lot of great friends there, you know, to this day that I talk to all the time. So it was definitely an experience that I'm glad I had in my career, for sure.
Well, if you're not so keen on L.A., what's been the best place that you've ever traveled to?
Let me think. Well, most of America is just, I love it. Like the southern states, Texas and Florida and all these places, it's just the rock fan there is really a rock fan. They're really into rock and roll, and they support your band right to the end, you know, no matter what. And so I love the southern states for just the actual excitement of rock and roll. They still get very excited to see a band, you know. And other than that, Canada's beautiful, the tour, a bit large, you know, the cities are a little spread apart here. It's the only thing, sometimes you got to travel 18 hours to get to a different market to play a show. But like I said, going back to the Maiden tours that the Killer Dwarfs did, the UK, again, is very similar to the southern states, as in rock fans are true-blooded rock fans. Like they support their bands, and they hold that flag for your band. If they're into you, they let you know it. And I mean, that's what we value the most as musicians, is really our fan base. That's all we have, you know. The fans is really why we play rock and roll, you know.
Right on. Well, we're actually going to go into a music break, give Daryl a little bit of a break, and also wrap your ears around this, people. We've only got a couple of more questions for Daryl, so if you would like to stay in line, dude.
Yeah, I'm not going anywhere unless you kick me off.
Okay, well, we're going to be listening to an Automan track, and it's called Dig In Deep. Happened again. I nearly missed my cue because of this one.
Sorry about that, folks. We were making rather merry on the phone.
Yeah, it's all good times anyway, as JLC would say. And now, of course, it is a important question to us all UK listeners. When are you coming to the UK?
Okay, here's what's happening. We now have all the politics in place. I have a great agent that's here in Canada, but he also works, you know, alongside of other agencies in America and overseas as well. And so we're kind of just planning an 8-month sort of tour for this to support the Pocket Change disc. And it's going to be at least 200 shows. That's what I've requested to the agent. I want to play at least 200 shows for the remainder of the year and into next year. So we're going to start with Canada first, because it just makes sense. So we're probably going to start touring in June. We're playing locally right now in the Toronto area. In fact, we're doing a big cancer benefit for Princess Margaret Hospital. So for any listeners from Toronto area, on April 30th, we're playing at Club Tattoo, which is a really nice club here in Toronto. Great sight lines to see a band, good production, PA and lights. It's a good club. And, we're playing this benefit. It's April 30th, and it's for, it's called the Conquer Cancer Concert. So it's for a good cause. And in June, we're going to tour Canada, then the U.S., and I'm hoping the U.K. will be in there somewhere within that mix. So if there's any promoters in the U.K. listening, go to our website, www.automan.ca, and there's contacts there, and I'll put you in touch with our agent. I would come over to the UK next week if you invited me.
For people who are kind of like new to Automan, what can they expect when they see a live show?
Well, there's one cool thing that we played a concert last week, and it was our first one of the Pocket Change tour. We just started up again, and you know, I'm well known as a pro drummer, like we all know that. I've had this long drumming career for over 25 years as a pro drummer. So what I've done for that fan that, you know, just won't let go of the fact that I'm a drummer, although I'm a lead singer in Automan, we built this really cool double drum kit, and I play one song a night. I get up with my drummer, and we play one song instrumental, and we have a blast with him. We trade off chops and do a little drum solo sort of deal. And so that's in the show now, and it's very exciting. And otherwise, we do a 75-minute show if we're not an opening act, and we pretty well play every track off the Pocket Change disc, as well as stuff off our EP that came out in 2003. It's called Test Drive Times 5, the EP that's out, and you can get that too at iTunes and everywhere. So, and then there's some other things that happen in the show that I'd rather people just come and see for themselves.
Okay, you wouldn't like to give too much away to them.
No.
Hells no. Right, okay, so you got some dates coming up, hopefully, in the UK, but defo in Canada and everywhere else. And where can they find out those dates again? Just plug your links, your websites?
Probably the best spot would be the band's home website or even MySpace, but the band's home website is automan.ca, so www.automan.ca. Or you can go to MySpace, and it's MySpace/AutomanCA, which is Automan Canada. And I was explaining off the phone, or when we were off air, to Vicky that the band, you'll always see in our band's name on all our media, it's automan.ca, just due to the fact that I couldn't own Automan outright, because there's a TV show in the United States that was out in the 80s called Automan. So I tacked .ca on it for Automan Canada, but you can just call us Automan, no problem.
Cool. So make sure you check it out, people. myspace.com/automan.ca. Well, thank you, Daryl, for coming on the show.
Okay. Thank you, Vicky, for having me. It was a wonderful time, and enjoy your weekend.
You too, man. And don't get too drunk.
Well, I am a Scot. We'll see.
Cool. And also enjoy the Anvil premiere as well, and say hi to the band.
I will. I will mention your name to those boys tonight.
Awesome. Cool. Well, we're going to play our last track from Automan. It is called Driving, Rocking, Loving. Enjoy. Alright, that was Automan with Driving, Rocking, Loving. I would like to thank Daryl for coming on my show. He's such a cool guy, and he's absolutely rocking, and hopefully he'll come to the UK soon and buy me a drink. Anyway, on the Bloodstock front, just before we go, we have got lots of bands that have been confirmed for the festival, some of them being Blind Guardian, Cradle of Filth, and also Girl School have been added to the list, but I think the talk of the year has to go to their lineup. It is a Swedish band. They have a absolutely anthem of a song, and everybody knows it, and it kind of goes something like this. Oh yes, Europe have confirmed for Bloodstock 2009. Oh yes, and you can find out all the latest from Bloodstock on bloodstock.uk.com. And also as well, you can check out my official Bloodstock podcast as well, which is a link to their website and also on iTunes as well. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. This is Vix the Angel of Metal signing out for now. Keep it loud till next time.